Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning. Thanks for joining me on The Garden Show on this beautiful spring morning. I tell you what, this kind of weather, when you walk out, it's going to seem chilly. But it's really not. You know, it's mild. It's really not cold at all. But I tell you what, just enjoy that. Store that memory away. It is not that far in the future where waking up and feeling a cool morning like this will be a distant memory. When 90 degrees and 90% humidity slaps you in the face at 10 o'clock in the morning, oh goodness, we know summer is here. So this is some delightful weather to enjoy. We'll have mild weather through the early part of May, but come May, we start seeing the 90s creep in. You notice how we kind of do that as we move through the spring and we warm up. I think of temperatures kind of like this way. In March, our high temperatures begin to hit the 70s. And so we begin to see 70 showing up pretty regularly. We see 70s through the winter season, but in March, they begin to become more numerous as a daytime high. Then in April, we start seeing the 80s. And 80s aren't just a little occasional thing. They pop up here and there, and the more we get through April, the more 80s we see. So in April, I think about we start reaching the 80s, and 80s become our highs. And then in May, although we may start off mild, it is in May that we start hitting the 90s. And so May really ushers in, for us, our summer season. When we start hitting the 90s regularly, we know good and well summer is here. So appreciate, that's not that far away, about a month away or so. So appreciate this current weather. It's you couldn't ask for more delightful weather to get out and do some gardening. So if you're a gardener, this is the kind of day you dream about to get out and enjoy your garden. And lots of things are going on as well in the garden. We've got vegetables growing. We're still planting vegetables in our gardens. We've got lots of cool season bedding plants that we planted beginning last October, November, if we are smart, and that have been blooming for us through the winter. And now they're really beginning to put on a tremendous display, the crescendo of their season. And so that's the beauty of planting cool season bedding plants. In the fall, I'm talking about things like pansies and dianthus and petunias, alyssum, calendulas, all the many wonderful cool season bedding plants that like temperatures like this weekend, where nighttime lows hit the 50s and daytime highs hit the 70s. That is their cup of tea, and they're thriving in this weather. And indeed, they're cold hardy as well, so they weren't bothered by the freezes we had back in December and January. So again, these are invaluable for gardeners who love color, who love flower beds, just bubbling over with rich color. It's on the late side to plant cool season bedding plants. And I tell gardeners this every year. When you drive around and see gorgeous beds of snapdragons and petunias and dianthus and pansies and violas that look so great right now, you can't have them at this point. If you go out to the nurseries and buy pansies right now, for instance, or dianthus, they don't like the heat. That's why we call them cool season bedding plants. And so you'll get a beautiful April and end of May out of them. But within 6 weeks or so after you plant them, the heat will begin to get to them. Now compare that with somebody that planted the same kind of pansies that cost the same amount of money in October and saw flowers in October, November, December, January, February, March, April. I mean, what, 6 months instead of 6 weeks? 6 months of color. So you understand that once we begin to reach the end of a season, here I'm not talking about spring, winter, fall. I'm talking about our growing seasons, the gardening seasons that direct when and what we do in our gardens. When we begin to reach the end of the season, and we are reaching the end of the cool season, we're transitioning into the warm season even now. Well, planting plants that like that season at the very end of that season doesn't do you any favors and doesn't do them any favors. So I would begin to stay away from the cool season bedding plants that you still may see out and about. The nursery owners tell me, look, people see beautiful beds of, you know, petunias or beautiful beds of dianthus or beautiful beds of snapdragons, and they come in looking for them. So, you know, I'm just trying to take care of their desires. But as a conscientious consumer and a knowledgeable gardener, you know that you won't get your bang for your buck planting those plants this late. Instead, it's time to transition over to the warm season bedding plants. So look for all the wonderful bedding plants that will take the heat and grow well here during the summertime that are reliable. And if you're not sure as you're looking around at the nursery, that's what the staff is there for. If you're not accustomed to availing yourself of getting questions answered by the staff at your local nursery, well, you're not getting your money's worth for your time and effort and the money you spend there. The staff is there to help you out, and part of the price you pay for your plants pays for their salary. So take advantage of them. When they walk up and say, can I help you? And you're just inclined to say, oh, I'm just looking around. Think of a question, any question. Look at the plant you're just looking at and say, well, tell me something about this plant right here. Just get used to utilizing the staff. They can make such a difference. So one of the big questions to ask this time of the year is this a good summer bedding plant? Will this take the heat and provide color for me from now, well, until September or October at the end of the year? And so we have some really great tough heat-tolerant plants that can do that for us. And those, despite the beautiful crisp chill to the air this morning, it is the hot weather plants. It is the summer bedding plants that we need to be focused on getting into our flower beds this time of the year. All righty, y'all, I have just rattled on, hadn't I? And we've got a whole good show coming up for you. Of course, I'm here to answer your gardening questions. You make the show come alive when you call in. And if there's something else, something that I can help you out with that you've got a question about, whether it's a pest problem or what to plant or not plant, this is a place to get the information you need to make your plants grow as good as you want them to. That phone number to call is 504-260-1870. Give me a call. Get lined up. I'll be back from the break in just a minute. Good morning. We're talking gardening, and if you've got something I can help you out with, a lot of plants in our gardens. We got lawns and vegetables and flowers and all kinds of stuff out there. And if you need a little help with something, that phone number to call once again is 504-260-1870. Let's head to the phones. We got Milk Cow calling in from Harvey. Good morning. What can he do for you?
Hey, Dan, how you doing?
Great.
You know, I heard you guys talking earlier. It's really a beautiful morning. Actually, I'm on my way to Venice. You know, I'm going fishing. But what I wanted to ask you about was my watermelon plants. They're just coming up, right?
Okay.
And like right at the tip of them, right at the edge, they're like turning like brown. Like I haven't put no insecticide or, you know, anything on it yet. All I did was fertilize it. But I want to know what I could use.
So these are just little baby seedlings that have just come up?
Yes, right.
Huh.
Doesn't
seem like a disease would hit them that quick. You know, just as they're kind of coming up. How did you fertilize them?
You know, with Miracle-Gro and stuff like that, you know.
Okay, so you used a soluble fertilizer. Did you use more than one kind of fertilizer?
Not really. You know, I don't really know. You know, I just use the traditional stuff, you know, go to the garden center or something like that.
The reason I ask is that sometimes we use more than one kind of fertilizer, thinking they're different things. But we end up putting too much fertilizer down. It's like taking, you know, too many pills. You may take three different brands of a medicine, but if they all have the same active ingredient, then you're overdosing yourself. And so sometimes we put more than one fertilizer out thinking, oh, I got this fertilizer and that one. And the reason I ask is that brown edges to the leaves can be caused by over-fertilization. And young plants, seedling plants, are more sensitive to over-fertilization than older plants are. And so it is possible, depending on how you fertilized, how many you used, and how much you put out, that that may be the issue. Now, if that's the case, there's a good chance the plants are going to get over this. As it rains, we got a lot of rain through recently, it's going to leach some of those fertilizers out. What I tell you is, for the time being, stop fertilizing. You know, don't use any more Miracle-Gro. Just hold off and see if things can settle down some with those. It seems a little early that there would be any kind of diseases attacking plants that young. Now, I'll tell you what you might want to do is, you've got your local horticulturist with the LSU Ag Center there in the New Orleans area in Jefferson Parish. And what you might want to do is take a picture of those watermelons and email it to them and let them take a look at that. When you can see something, it's always better than me trying to, you know, do something visually by verbal description. And you can have them take a look, and just to make sure that there's nothing other than that going on. The easy thing to do would be just to do an internet search for Jefferson LSU Ag Center. Just do an internet search for Jefferson LSU Ag Center when you get back to your computer, and that'll pull up the website, and you can get the email address and everything from there. But I'd encourage you might want to go ahead and do that. But otherwise, just my guess is, if I had to guess, it might be related perhaps to fertilizer, and the plant should get over that. Just don't put any more out.
Sat it with my garden, you know. I think that's what it is, because I was fertilizing it, maybe able to do. You know, I think that's
okay,
what it really
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm going to pull that site up.
That's a good one. You'll be glad you did. Consider them a resource for you in your gardening efforts in the future as well. I appreciate the call. You take care, and hey, have a good time fishing.
Happy Easter, you all. Thank you.
You too now. Bye-bye. Alrighty, let's see now. We got Paul calling in from Covington. Paul, good morning. You're on the Garden Show.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Easter to you.
You too.
I have two questions. I had a couple of pallets of sod put down yesterday, and I'm wondering about watering. I watered it good yesterday. Do I need to water it every day, you think?
That is a real good question, Paul, because when the sod is put down, you know, the grass has lost the overwhelming majority of its root system when it's harvested. So there's not a lot of roots there to absorb water. So what roots are there need water to be able to absorb to keep the sod going. So watering newly laid sod properly is really critical, but we walk a fine line because we know we need to water frequently because the sod, you know, has to grow new roots out. But we know that if we keep the sod too wet, we're very likely to encourage disease problems that can ravage newly laid sod. And that's the fine line we walk. So here's what I usually recommend to you, Paul. For the first 7 to 10 days after the sod is laid, water it every day. A sprinkler works well for this. And leave the sprinkler on for about 15 or 20 minutes. You don't have to deep water. There are no roots deep in the soil. So you don't have to leave the sprinkler on for, you know, 45 minutes or so the way you might normally water a lawn that's established. So for about 15 or 20 minutes every day, sprinkle all areas that were newly laid. And then for the next 7 to 10 days, water every other day, but water a little bit longer. Water for about 20 to 30 minutes and do that every other day for about 7 to 10 days. Again, that's watering more deeply and encouraging those grass roots to grow down into the soil. But after that, you've got to stop. If you continue to water frequently after the first couple of weeks or so, then you're going to begin to really encourage disease problems. But don't stop watering. Just stop watering so frequently. Keep an eye on the lawn. Rain is going to be helpful. Don't forget to factor rain in. If we're getting rain, you don't go out and water automatically on the day you were supposed to water if it's already rained. So factor rain in as well. And if we continue to get regular rainfall as we have been, then the lawn's not going to need a great deal of watering. But especially through the early part of the summer, through the month of May, as the weather gets warmer, pay attention to watering. But, Paul, don't forget that you can overdo it. And if you water excessively, the diseases can be a real issue.
Okay. Is there a better time of day to water in the morning?
Morning is traditional, and with good reason. I mean, if the grass needs water on Monday, would you water in the morning so the grass is well provided with water through the day, through the warmest part of the day? Or would you water at 4 o'clock in the afternoon when the grass has already come through the hottest part of the day thirsty and it says, well, gee, now you're going to water me. I've been thirsty all day. So just by tradition, just by common sense, watering in the morning is generally preferred. However, you can water any time. If you get home from work and the grass looks dry or you forgot to water, for goodness sakes, it's better to water in the afternoon than not water at all. So again, morning is preferred, but any time is acceptable.
All right, and I got a second question. I've got a bunch of azalea bushes that have sort of gotten out of hand. They bloom beautifully, and I think the time to trim them back is now. Is that correct?
Well, as soon as they, if you're going to cut back fairly hard, which it sounds like you kind of want to do, right after they finish flowering is a great time to do that. And azaleas are usually pretty tolerant of pruning. So, you know, if you need to cut them back a third or a half of their height, that's usually not an issue. Don't forget, however, now that you've decided you need to control their size, this is an ongoing thing. It's not going to be a cut them back once, and years from now you cut them back again. Is you're going to cut them back after they finish flowering and then revisit them in June. See if they've grown up enough to need to be cut back again, because you have to stop cutting them back in early to mid-July. So reassess them in June. If they've gotten up tall again, cut them back again, and that'll set you up real good. And then don't forget, you want to cut them back every spring after they finish blooming. All righty, Paul, thanks for the call. Appreciate it, folks. Time to take a news break. We have the CBS News update first. Then Don Ames is in with WWL First News. But after we catch y'all up on the latest news, we'll be back with your gardening questions and more of The Garden Show. So stay tuned. Good morning. Thanks for joining me on The Garden Show. I am here to answer your gardening questions this morning. So if you've got something I can help you out with, that phone number once again, 504-260-1870. When we went to break, I was talking to Paul from Covington about his newly laid sod. A couple of things went through my mind over the break on that. I did tell Paul, you know, morning irrigation is preferred, but otherwise you can water just about any time. And that's really true. But I would say that the least appropriate time to irrigate your lawn, or really your landscape in general, is in the early evening or really late afternoon as the sun's going down, because that wets the foliage at a time when, as the sun goes down, there's nothing there to dry the foliage off. So the foliage stays wet for an extended period. Now, why is that an issue? Well, fungal diseases that drift around as spores in the air need wet leaf surfaces to infect plants. So if a spore lands on a dry leaf, nothing happens. Nothing. The spore doesn't sprout, no infection occurs. It's like a piece of dust. But if that spore lands on a moist leaf, and that a leaf is of a plant that can be a host of that particular disease, then the spore can sprout and cause an infection. So the more our plant leaves stay dry, the fewer diseases we have. And so irrigating late in the afternoon, early evening is discouraged. It's not terrible. It's not the end of the world, but it's just not preferred for that reason. In particular, things that are prone to leaf diseases, lawns, vegetable gardens, flower beds, roses are all prone to leaf diseases. So try to avoid wetting their foliage when they won't have time to do some drying out. The second thing is a question that Paul should probably have asked me as well is, when should I mow my newly sodded lawn for the first time? And the answer to that is quite easy: when it needs it. So depending on the kind of grass you have and the height that you're going to be mowing it at, mow the grass when it's a little bit taller than the preferred height that you're going to want to keep it at. And just do that when you see it needs to be done. That's just up to the grass and you watching it. Alrighty, folks, let's see. We got Peter on the line calling in from Kill, Mississippi. Peter, good morning. Welcome to the Garden Show.
Good morning. Let's see, two questions. But first is a couple of years ago, I had all these dead spots in my lawn just popped up that looked like, I don't know, like burn spots. And then someone told me later it was lawn fungus. Now I see it in my neighbor, like a really large spot, probably it's gone to about 6 feet around, like just a round circle. How to combat that?
Well, the disease that's most active right now, when we talk about lawn diseases, they're seasonal, and different diseases are active at different times of the year. So the time of the year gives a horticulturist a hint as to what diseases might be going on. Currently, we have a lot of infections of brown patch. It's commonly called these days large patch, but those of us who knew it as brown patch still call it brown patch. This is probably one of those common lawn diseases, especially like St. Augustine, but it will attack centipede. And it causes usually round areas. It will start off sort of small and then rapidly enlarge bigger and bigger, almost as you watch from day to day. The fungus can be controlled by applying a lawn fungicide. There are a wide variety of effective lawn fungicides available at your local nursery, garden centers, and feed and seed stores. And so you just go in and check their lawn supply section, just anything that says it controls lawn diseases, and use it per label directions. Make two applications. When there's an active infection, two applications following label recommendations are better than just one. So your neighbor should go ahead and do that. Now, it's not going to suddenly make the lawn turn green again. The damage that's done is done. And sometimes people put a fungicide out, and 2 weeks later, the spot's still there, and they go, well, it didn't work. The spot didn't turn green again. Well, the damage is done. Now, that grass may recover. I would give it 4 to 6 weeks to recover. But if the grass has been killed in an area, it's just not going to turn green again. And at that point, your neighbor should remove the dead grass. This could be sometime in May or so, and lay new sod to repair the damage that was done. But for goodness sakes, to stop the damage from continuing, application of a fungicide today would be advisable.
Okay, I'll let them know. But one other thing is, I did weed and feed like the early part of March. Do I need to do one more of weed killer on there? Because I want to make sure I don't get stickers in my yard. I live off a river, so everybody's barefoot all the time.
Well, Peter, either you have stickers now or you don't. If you don't have stickers now, you're not going to get stickers. The sticker weed germinates in the fall and grows over the winter and produces its stickers in the spring after growing all winter long. And the stickers are there. So you lucked out if you don't have stickers now. But feel free, if you'd like, to put out another application of a lawn fungicide. It's been 6 weeks or so since your other application. So you could put out another application of a weed killer. Probably too soon to fertilize, but you could put out another application of a weed killer.
All right. Thanks so much. Happy Easter. Enjoy your show.
Peter, thank you. Same to you and your family. All righty, folks, got to take a quick break. If you're hanging on the line, do hang on, because you know your question's important to me, and we'll be back right after this. Good morning. We're talking gardening, and if you've got a question I can help you out with, do not be shy or hesitant about calling in. I'd be happy to help you out. Let's head to the phones and talk to Beatrice, calling in from Slidell. Good morning, Beatrice.
Oh, good morning. I'm having a problem with my Bradford pear tree. I moved in this house about 19 years ago, and the tree was full size at that time. It's about 30 feet high. I noticed it didn't leaf out this spring. So I had a retired arborist. He looked at it, and he told me that it was dead. And he suggested that I replace it with an understory tree that can take some shade, because I have a small backyard. And the yard is surrounded by other trees. One of them is a large live oak on the south side. So the tree is kind of in dappled shade. Now, the tree is in a small backyard, and it's the yard has the paving blocks laid in sand, like to create a patio effect. Mm-hmm. And there's an oval opening about 8 by 10 feet that the tree is in. Because when I had the tree was existing when I had the blocks laid. So he suggested that I have it cut down and the stump ground. But we didn't talk about if I replace a tree in that same spot, can I plant it with all those stump grindings? How would that work?
Well, what you'd want to do is when they grind the stump, you know, talk to the person that's going to do the grinding and say, I need to put another tree right here in this location. So it's especially important that you do a very thorough job. You need to get down and get all of that stump, including the part mm-hmm. that's underground, and even the big part of those major roots that came off the stump. They need to get as much of that out of there as possible. And then you rake out the ground up wood that was the old stump that is raked out and removed from the area, and oftentimes that leaves somewhat of a depression, and you can come back in and fill that with some pump sand or river sand or some kind of a fill, and then you can use those wood chips to mulch flower beds and, you know, other areas of your landscape, or pile them up and compost them if you'd like, could be done as well. So you don't want to plant the new tree in the wood chips that are the result of the grinding of the stump. You want to remove all that, and then if there's a need be, add more soil before you plant your tree.
Okay, and I wondered, I was looking at either a Japanese maple or a parsley hawthorn for that spot.
Both of those are lovely, lovely trees. They both appreciate some shade during the day. They're small trees. You have a rather large tree in that location. These would be much smaller. These are trees that would peak out at around 15 feet, maybe 20 feet, but usually around 15 feet, which might not be bad because it might seem overwhelmed by big trees around it and that big pear sitting there in the middle of it. So a smaller tree might actually open up that area some. Either of those are a good choice. The more reliable of the two, I'd say, would be the parsley hawthorn because it is native to our area. But if you love the form, the grace, and oftentimes the colorful foliage of a Japanese maple, with a shady location like that, it should work out good for you.
Okay, well, all right, thank you. And I have one other quick question. I just noticed in my lawn, some Virginia buttonweed just starting to show up here and there. What should I spray that with?
With it young like this, you could probably get pretty good control with one of the multi-active ingredient lawn weed killers like Weed Be Gone, Weed Free Zone, Speed Zone. These have several active ingredients. And when it's young in the spring, they'll do a pretty good job. You can either spot treat just right on top of the areas where you see it growing, or treat the entire lawn, whichever you prefer.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Appreciate the call, Beatrice.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Stay tuned for more of The Garden Show, y'all, right after this break. Good morning. It's a beautiful, beautiful morning out there. Gorgeous weekend. Lots of opportunity to do some good gardening work if you need to. If you haven't fertilized your lawn yet, it is time to get some fertilizer this weekend and apply that to your lawn to make sure you've got a good, vigorously growing, thick, healthy lawn, be more resistant to weed encroachment, and a nice, better color, and for those of you who love to mow, a faster rate of growth when you fertilize. So it is a high time to get that done. We usually start fertilizing in late March, you can certainly get that done. You may use a weed and feed. If you haven't applied a herbicide already, a weed killer already, you could use a weed and feed type fertilizer if you'd like to go ahead and do that. I had a question about Virginia buttonweed, another weed that's really prolific right now with all the rain we've been having is dollarweed. There's a herbicide called atrazine, and atrazine is safe to use on St. Augustine and centipede. It's A-T-R-A-Z-I-N-E, atrazine. It's really considered the most effective based on LSU Ag Center trials. It does a real good job. But if you've tried products and you haven't got a real good result, a combination of atrazine and one of the multi-active ingredient herbicides gives you virtually 100% control of dollar weed. Now, what I'm talking about with the other herbicides is something like Weed Be Gone or Weed Free Zone or Speed Zone, Trimec. These are multi-active ingredient materials. You mix them in the same tank. So you put the recommended amount of atrazine in the tank based on the directions on the atrazine label, and then you put the appropriate amount of, say, weed-free zone in the same tank based on the label recommendations, and then you add your water to it. And that combination spray is especially effective against dollar weed. It gives virtually 100% control in LSU Ag Center trials. So if you're having trouble with dollar weed and you've got atrazine, you've got St. Augustine or centipede, atrazine by itself would certainly be a good choice. And if you want to do the very best, then a combination of atrazine and a multi-active ingredient lawn weed killer will give you the very best control available there. And then don't forget to mention brown patch earlier while we're looking at lawn issues. If you see areas of your lawn that start off with a spot that gets larger and larger with all the rain and warm to mild temperatures we've had, brown patch is real active. Stop by your local nursery or garden center, pick up a lawn fungicide and apply it per label directions. Two applications if you've got an active infection. Don't forget the lawn won't look any better. If the fungicide is effective, the damage is done. You may need to do a little repair work later on in May if the grass doesn't recover. But keep an eye out for that. Diseases and weeds, lawn issues going on right now. Great first hour. Good callers, and I expect some great callers in the second hour as well. So don't go away. We have a whole other hour of the Garden Show coming up from 8 to 9. Before that, though, we're going to catch you up on the latest news around the area and around the world. Good morning. Thanks for joining me for the second hour of the WWL Garden Show. I'm here for you. I am here for you. If you got a gardening question, you can call on in. That phone number is 504-260-1870. Gorgeous weekend, beautiful weather. Get out and enjoy it some. And if you like to work in your yard, work in your yard today and store the memories of what it feels like to be this cool, because hot weather is not so far off, folks. But a beautiful, beautiful Easter weekend, and a blessed weekend to everybody out there. And if you got something I can help you out with, heading out to the nursery, have a question about something, wandered around the yard, saw something that you weren't sure about, that phone number to call is 504-260-1870. That's 504-260-1870. Coming up next weekend, a great plant sale. Oh, boy, I love these spring plant sales. And this is being put on by the LaTerre Master Gardener Association. And it is a great opportunity. The Master Gardeners always do a wonderful job of propagating their own plants. You can find unusual things that you can't find anywhere else. You ever heard the term pass-along plant? Pass-along plants are old-fashioned plants that have been passed along from gardener to gardener. They're tough. They're resilient. They would have never become pass-along plants if they weren't really, really reliable. And they're easy to propagate. Again, otherwise, they wouldn't become pass-along plants. And oftentimes, that category of unusual plants that are easy to grow and reliable and beautiful, but you just can't see them in the nursery that often, are oftentimes available at some of these Master Gardener sales. This sale is next Saturday. That's April the 27th. It'll kick off at 8 in the morning, run until 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's taking place at the Raceland Ag Center office, the Raceland LSU Ag Center office. That's behind the Raceland Schools off Highway 308 in Raceland. If you're in that area and you want directions, just do an internet search for Raceland LSU Ag Center, and that'll pull up their contact information and a map to the location as well. So next Saturday from 8 to 1, great annual plant sale, the LaTerre Master Gardener program. Strongly encourage you to take advantage of these local sales. You can find treasures. Let me tell you, treasures at these sales that you can't find anyplace else. All righty, again, if you got a gardening question, call on in. Let's head to the phones and talk to Leo, calling in from Chalmette. Leo, good morning.
Good morning, Dan.
What can I do for you?
Yes, sir. I had about a month ago, I started planting sod, and I water it every day, then every other day, and then I did the other part of my yard about 2 weeks ago. So now I'm watering it every other day. The thing is, I didn't level it as much, so I got a little sod that's a little down, and the other one is a little up. I'm trying to see what's the best way I can level that and just to make it when I can fertilize or
okay, Leo, you have one area that's too, you have one area that's too high and one area that's too low. Is that
yeah,
it?
Yeah, when the sod,
and you're wondering how to level
it higher than the ground.
Yeah. So you don't want it that high.
Well, I got about a 2-inch. Difference.
Okay, Leo, what is it you want to change?
Exactly. I'm trying to see what's the best way I can level that or have some kind
okay.
of fill-in
well,
with
for
some
the areas,
top soil or something
basically,
like that.
Leo, it's not rocket science. For the areas that are too low, add fill. For the areas that are too high, remove the sod, remove some of the soil to the appropriate level, and lay the sod back down. That's
okay.
basically
and
it.
As far as fertilizing...
Oh, I would wait. I usually wait about 4 to 6 weeks after laying the sod to fertilize. That gives the sod a chance to grow roots. You know, the grass absorbs the fertilizer through its root system, and newly laid sod has very few roots. It just doesn't have much of a root system that was lost when the sod was harvested. So give the grass time to grow out a good root system and then fertilize it. Again, about 4 to 6 weeks after you laid the sod, and you can use any lawn fertilizer. I wouldn't recommend weed and feed. Just use a lawn fertilizer.
Okay. Now, the other thing, too, the reason I had to replant some sod was because of I have a dog as well, so they told me to keep them tied up as much as possible or off the lawn until they get really gone. Is that about accurate?
Oh, absolutely. And again, we like to keep kids playing or pets running and wear and tear on that newly laid sod for a good 4 to 6 weeks to let that sod root in. If kids start running on it or dogs start running and making sharp turns and kicking up on that sod, they can dislodge the sod and break roots. So ideally, and let me say this too, Leo, if the dog destroyed an existing lawn, then the dog will destroy the new lawn ultimately. Even though you wait
right.
for the grass to be established and the grass is there growing, if the dog was able to take out an established lawn before, it can take out an established lawn again. So you may have to exercise some rules and how the dog is allowed to run in the yard or give up an area for the dog to have. Just so you can look into the future, it may happen again, even if you keep the dog off of it. But the short answer to your question was 4 to 6 weeks, keep kids and big pets off of your newly laid sod.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. All righty. We got Bill calling in from Harvey. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
What you got, Bill?
Two questions. One, you were talking last week about fertilizer requirements for plants that would normally grow wild.
I remember a question about a gardener trying to grow wild violets, and she got lots and lots of foliage and very few flowers. And I told her, I said, well, don't forget that plants, native wildflowers that are not domesticated, oftentimes are very efficient in using nutrients, and we have to be careful about over-fertilizing. So when you're growing wildflowers, and again, not cultivated forms of wildflowers, but you know, the original old wildflowers, then be careful with how much you fertilize. If you fertilize them too much, you may get a lot of rank growth at the expense of flowers. And that was the conversation.
Okay. I bought a plant. It is called a Ruellia, R-U-E-L-L-I-A.
Ruellia.
Okay. And there were two of them, and they were potted up and growing together. One was called a wild Ruellia, and the other one purple showers. Historically, I've been putting on some slow-release fertilizer, and after listening to last week, I wasn't sure if I was doing the right thing or the wrong thing.
Sure, these are cultivated plants, Bill. Even though you see the word wild in the name, this is a plant you bought at the nursery. This isn't
correct.
A plant that you dug up from the roadside. So again, these are
correct.
Plants that have been cultivated and produced. They've been fertilized during production. So using a slow release, don't overdo it. Remember, one application is good for months. Using a slow release is great. The Ruellias as a group tend to be very vigorous growers. And so you're going to find, whether you fertilize a Ruellia or not, you're probably going to get, you know, good growth off of it. But I wouldn't be overly concerned about fertilizing moderately. But again, these are not wild plants like the wild violets that she had dug out of the wild. These are cultivated plants.
Okay, good, good. I understand and thank you much. The second question, and I don't think I've heard you talk about this, is when you're pruning, they have what are called anvil and bypass. Which are best for what application?
I prefer, most commercial horticulturists and professionals prefer the bypass type pruners. The bypass pruners have two blades. They cut from two directions, and that gives you a cleaner cut, a neater cut. Also, the blades allow, the way that the pruner is designed, the bypass pruner allows you to position your pruning cut more precisely where you want to make it. The anvil has one blade and then a flat stage. So the blade comes down from the top and crushes the stem against the stage and makes the cut that way. With the bypass, you have two blades cutting, one from the bottom, one from the top. And that's what gives you the cleaner cut. Also, the width of the stage can influence how you position your pruner. And that's why the bypass pruners are better able to position. So generally speaking, bypass is what I'd recommend.
Okay, great. Thank you. I really appreciate your help.
Thanks for the call, Bill. You too now.
Okay.
Oh, boy, did I go over that break. So, folks, stay tuned. We're going to have a break here, and we'll be back right after. Good morning. We're talking gardening. And if you've got a question I can help you out with, please feel free to call in. That phone number is 504-260-1870. Had a caller call in with a question about a horticulturist versus an arborist. And very, very good question. Now, y'all listen carefully. The green industry, that is the industry that deals with nurseries and landscape maintenance and landscape installation and landscape design and everything, you know, related to that, is regulated in Louisiana by the Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Professionals in the green industry have got to be licensed. Your local nursery owners have to be licensed. Your local landscape maintenance people have to be licensed. The people that take care of your trees have to be licensed. The people that put in irrigation systems have to be licensed. People that have florist shops have to be licensed. That whole industry is regulated. Now, knowing what kind of licensed professional you need is very important when it comes to getting a professional to help you with your landscape. A horticultural license, and it's called the landscape horticultural license, the person that has that kind of a license is a general horticulturist. They have knowledge about lawns and trees and shrubs and ground covers and bedding plants. They're the licensed individuals that do landscape installation, if you need a landscape installed, or they do landscape maintenance. So a landscape horticulturist is a license that somebody would have to ask if you're going to hire somebody to work on your yard. Ask them. They've got to have their license to do that work on your yard. Then there are specialty licenses. An arborist is a specialty license. A licensed arborist is an individual who is highly trained in tree maintenance, tree care. They're trained in diagnosing tree problems, insects and diseases. They're knowledgeable about pruning trees, removing trees safely, fertilizing trees. Their whole focus is on trees. So if you have a tree issue, if you have an issue with specifically associated with a tree, a problem or a question, then you would want to hire a licensed arborist to take care of that. Now, they're not the same. A horticulturist, a licensed horticulturist, again, remember, is a generalist. That would be like your general practitioner, the doctor that you go to on a regular basis that is aware of your entire body and what could go wrong with any number of issues. Compared with a cardiologist, that would be like the arborist. A cardiologist is knowledgeable about strictly your heart issues, and they would be somebody you would bring in for a heart problem. So again, an arborist is like a cardiologist. They are a specialist. They're knowledgeable about a particular area, but you wouldn't call an arborist if you have problems with your shrubs or problems with your lawn or questions about your landscape or how to design a landscape. Other professionals can help you with that. So again, when you're thinking about what kind of work you need to have done on your yard, there are different kinds of licensed professionals that will help you. And to add a bit to that, if you're going to have pesticides used on your lawn, whether it's a weed killer or an insecticide, anything along those lines, a professional then would have to be licensed with their commercial pesticide applicator's license. So if you have a commercial company who is applying pesticides, also ask to see their commercial pesticide applicator's license. So again, remember, the green industry is regulated for your protection, to make sure that the professionals that you use are knowledgeable in the area and have been tested in their knowledge of that area. And always ask, when you're using a green professional, about their license, because you want to make sure that your license, the professionals are properly licensed. If you ever have a question or a problem, if there's a mistake made, if there's some sort of argument that comes up between you and a green professional, the Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry is the government agency that you need to contact to lodge a complaint or make any comments that you may have about a professional in the green industry. So there is the difference between a horticulturist or a landscape horticulturist, licensed landscape horticulturist, and a licensed arborist. Again, do not call an arborist, although you may hear me tell people you should call an arborist for your tree problems. Don't call an arborist for your typical landscape issues. For that, you get a licensed landscape horticulturist to help you out. Hope that clears things up some for you. Let's go to the phones and talk to Gary, calling in from Lakeview. Gary, good morning. Oh, Gary moved on. Let's go to Christy from New Orleans. Christy, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Christy. What can I do for you?
So I have a question. So I've had adult dogs in the past, and I know what they can do to a lawn as far as when they go to the bathroom. So I have a new puppy. And so I'm starting all over, fresh lawn, and the puppy isn't damaging the lawn yet, but I know eventually it will start to, you know, discolor. So I was trying to see if there is anything that I can apply to the lawn or anything that I can do to help aid in preserving the color of the lawn.
Well, Christy, the main damage that dogs do is physical. Number one, running around, tearing the grass up, running back and forth. But they can also damage the lawn when they urinate on the lawn. The dog's urine can actually burn the lawn. And that occurs as small, discrete spots. The rest of the lawn looks fabulous, but these little small spots start showing up maybe 4 to 6 inches across, where the grass looks brown and dead while the grass around it looks just fine. That's urine damage. And it's very obvious that when you see it happening. Now, it's generally not that horrible unless you have multiple big dogs that are going all over the place. If you have one medium-sized to small dog, you're not likely to see a lot of damage. But if you have one of the larger breeds, Labradors, Retrievers, and so forth, then it's more likely that you're going to have some spots. One option is to go out with your dog when it's going to urinate. When it urinates, pour a bunch of water. Have a little jug of water with you. And after it urinates, pour water over that area to dilute the urine. That would be one way of doing it. The other is to train your dog to go in a particular area, and that will limit the damage. So keep in mind to train your dog to a limited area, and that will keep the damage to a limit. All right, folks, got to go to a news break here. We got the CBS News Update, then Don Ames with WWL First News. We'll be back with more of the Garden Show right after that. Good morning. We're talking gardening, and if you've got a gardening question, this is the place to get the information you need to make those plants grow as good as you want them to. 504-260-1870 is the number to call, 504-260-1870. Let's head to the phone to talk to Terry, calling in from Slidell. Terry, good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Dan. I have a question about a couple of things. Last year, we treated our yard for webworm, and we treated it with bifenthrin. And this year, I want to apply, you know, on the yard again to prevent. But also, we've noticed that we have molds in our yard, and I wanted to spray castor oil. Can I combine the two and do a one spray?
Well, if you treat with an insecticide now, Terry, when the webworms come out in late summer and fall, the pesticide you put out now will be long, 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 long. So you won't get any protective benefit from spraying this far in the future. You have to think about when they actually begin to show up and make your spray application closer to that time. Now, we don't have an outbreak every year, so we normally don't recommend preventative spraying for the sod webworms. They usually show up every few years or so. Sometimes for extended periods, we won't have any. But again, don't treat now with an insecticide. It'd be better to treat more like in July or August at the earliest, I would think. They may show up as early as July, but usually it's August, September, into October when the sod webworms are an issue. So feel free to use a repellent with castor oil in it now for the moles, see if it will help out some. Moles have a way of showing up for a while and then kind of moving on typically. So hopefully within a few weeks or a couple of months or so, they'll decide to move on to new greener pastures. In the meantime, when you see a tunnel, just walk on it, push down with your feet to push the soil and sod back down to flatten the tunnel. That discourages them. They hate that. And it makes the grass happier to get the grass roots pushed back down. So as much as you can, you know, walk along those tunnels and crush them back down again, be better.
Okay. And then can I combine then the castor oil with our weed preventer? Or should they be separate spray-ins?
That's a hard one, Terry. I'm going to have to say maybe not. Castor oil isn't something that I've ever heard anybody combine with anything. So I'm not sure what an effect it might have. And things can have an effect on the on how well something works when you start mixing things together. So I'd be inclined to tell you to do them separately just to be on the safe side.
And does it matter what order I do it in?
Absolutely not. Although if I had a weed issue, I'd probably get a herbicide out sooner the better.
Okay. That's what I needed to know. Thank you so much, and you have a wonderful Easter.
You too, Terry. Bye-bye now. Alrighty, let's see. Mary is calling in from Metairie. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
What you got?
I can't remember the months I started spraying for rust mites on my orange trees.
Oh, I'm glad you checked on that, Mary. You got some time to mark your calendar. The rust mites begin to show up in the heat of summer. So we usually begin spraying preventatively around about the early part of June. So if you make an application, you know, the first week of June, the first week of July, and the first week of August, that protects the fruit from rust mite damage through that critical period when they tend to be the most active. So mark your calendar for early June, early July, early August, and use a light horticultural oil spray like year-round spray oil or all seasons spray oil.
Okay. I couldn't remember the first month I would have to start. That's what I was calling.
Well, that's what I'm here for, Mary.
So thank you so much, and a happy Easter to you.
Happy Easter to you, Mary. Take care now. All righty, folks, we're going to take care of some business and have a quick break. Don't go away. We'll be back with more gardening questions and information right here on the WWL Garden Show. Good morning. We're talking gardening, and if you got something I can help you out with, do call in. Don't be shy about it. I'll be happy to help you out. 504-260-1870. 1-870 is the number to call. Let's talk to Bill, calling in from Hammond. Hey, Bill, good morning.
Good morning.
So what's you up to?
I've got an orange tree that I wanted to cut back, but I'm afraid it may be too late. It already has blooms and flowers, and I didn't know whether I could still cut it back or not.
You may, Bill.
Oh, okay. I want to say this. Last year, it only produced about 30 oranges. The year before, it produced over hundreds of oranges. What can I do about that, if anything?
Well, what's it doing this year?
Well, I mean, as I said, it just started flowering. Well, it flowered about a month ago, I guess.
So you should see the green fruit on it. What's the crop look like?
Oh, well, I haven't seen any yet.
Bill, you should see little round green oranges on the tree. Have you looked?
I call myself looking, but I guess I better look again.
Well, when it blooms, then it makes the fruit. So if you don't have any fruit on the tree right now, you're not going to have any. If you don't have any on the tree now, you're not going to have any. Now, why that would happen, I don't know. There's no reason why a citrus tree would not set fruit for you this year. We had a mild winter. It's been a lovely spring. There's no reason in the world why a citrus tree wouldn't set a crop for you. But I can't tell you whether it did or not because I can't see your tree. Now, I can tell you last year, the poor trees were getting over a horrendous freeze. They had a terrible freeze to deal with. So a lot of people saw limited crops as a result of the big freeze we had in the past. But this year, there's no excuse. So, Bill, if you want to cut the tree back for some specific good reason, then feel free to cut it back. Now, when you go out there to cut the tree back, you may see little green oranges everywhere. And you'll have to understand that when you cut the tree back and cut off those oranges, you're reducing your crop.
Right.
So you'll have to decide then whether it's worth it to you to cut back the tree and give up some of the crop in order to do that. That may be the case you see when you go out there and look at it. But you can cut it back. It won't hurt the tree any to cut it back.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Bill. Appreciate the call. All righty. I wanted to remind you all that coming up next Saturday, great plant sale. You know, they're getting fewer. You know, the spring season is kind of passing by now, and all those wonderful events that have been happening all spring, plant shows and garden shows and lectures and everything, will begin to slow down a little bit. But here's a great plant sale still going on. It'll be next Saturday, April the 27th. It's put on by the LaTerre Master Gardener Association, and it's their great annual plant sale. And I always say, go to these Master Gardener plant sales. You can oftentimes find wonderful plants that aren't readily available in the nurseries, but are part of our gardening heritage, the kind of plants that gardeners share with each other. I mentioned the term pass-along plant. And some of the great things about these Master Gardener sales is they oftentimes propagate lots and lots of wonderful plants like that and make sure they have a lot of great plants available. Plus, the Master Gardeners are there to answer your gardening questions and help you learn how to take care of the plants that you decide to purchase. It's next Saturday from 8 in the morning until 1 in the afternoon, and it's taking place at the Raceland Ag Center office, and that's behind the Raceland Schools off Highway 308 in Raceland. If you're in that area, it's well worth a drive in to see the sale. And if you want to see directions, just do an internet search for Raceland LSU Ag Center. That'll pull up their website, and you can take a look at the map to the office and the whole shebang. But if you're still looking for some great plants to add to your collection, do not miss the plant sale by the LaTerre Master Gardener Program next Saturday, April 27th. All righty, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of The Garden Show. Good morning. Thanks for joining me on The Garden Show. Been a good show so far. We got more callers on the line, so let's go to the phones and talk to Jay calling from the North Shore. Hey, Jay, good morning.
Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm great, Jay. What can I do for you?
I love your show, by the way, and thank you so much for doing what you do. I have two questions, if you don't mind. First one is, I live on the North Shore, and I'm looking to plant a a bush of some sort that would allow me to have a green fence, you know, between me and my neighbors. I don't actually want to put up a wood fence. I just kind of want to come, say, 2 or 3 feet off the property line. And I'm looking for something that doesn't flower, six foot tall, and you kind of know what I'm saying. I don't know if you're familiar with what they have around, like, Rummel and around the high schools and the football fields that kind of grows up along the side of that fence. Any ideas that I can use on the North Shore with our cold winters that we have sometimes?
You're not that cold.
Well, you know.
Since you don't want flowers, I would say...
I don't mind the flowers as long as it's not a bunch to clean up. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay. Well, no, flowers are usually not that big of a deal. I'll tell you one of my favorite hedge plants for dividing property and privacy is a sweet viburnum. But it may be too big for your purposes. How tall did you say you wanted it to be?
It can go higher than 6 or 8 feet. I just, you know.
Oh, okay. Well, the viburnum's going to get to be up about, you know, 10, 12 feet, somewhere around in there.
Oh, that would be great.
And stay bushy to the ground with a spread of about 8 feet or so. So you want to come off 5 feet from the property line. So there's plenty of room for the hedge to spread and not get over the property line in your neighbor's property. So come well off the property line. It's usually a good idea to leave enough room where you can even mow behind it, just to maintain that, you know, neighborly separation between plantings.
Yes.
The sweet viburnum is very fast growing. It's tolerant to sun or shade. Likes a well-drained location, but tolerates poor drainage. I have a hedge of it planted not too far from my pond, and it just thrives there. That's a good fast-growing one. Other popular hedge plants include ligustrum, although people do have issues with the flowers making them sneeze. If you just want something 6 to 8 feet tall, the dwarf Burford holly, B-U-R-F-O-R-D, the dwarf Burford holly peaks out at about 6 to 8 feet. And it's a nice holly. It makes beautiful red berries. And it's on a smaller scale if you're looking for that. So those are just a few ideas that I can pop out at you there.
I love the viburnum idea. I think that would work. And you did say it sort of works in some partial sun application?
Absolutely. I've seen it planted under a live oak and still hang in there. So it will tolerate a fair amount of shade.
Okay. And you recommend just sort of building up some dirt and planting on the ground? Because they have some pretty hard ground on that side.
Well, I have a hard clay here in Prairieville. And it seems to just thrive in this hard clay I have here. So feel free to prepare a bed. You know, till up the area, till in some organic matter and prepare a bed. And then plant the shrubs along the bed. Keep that bed then mulched. You can water it with a soaker hose. Just run a soaker hose along the shrubs and then just hook it up to a hose and turn it on to water, easy to water. But the sooner you get planted at this point, the better. Hot weather is right around the corner, and we're leaving our ideal planting season because of that.
Yeah, I'm ready to do this soon.
All right, good deal. The sooner the better.
Thank you, sir. One last question, if you have a second, dollar weeds. I have a little bit of an issue with that. I know you talk about it on your show, but any particular product that you recommend that wouldn't harm the rest of the grass with that?
Well, the herbicide atrazine, A-T-R-I-Z-I-N-E, is great for St. Augustine and centipede lawns. And it's the most effective by itself on controlling that dollar weed.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time. You have a great day.
All right. Thanks a lot. Okay, we got Chris from Hammond. Chris, I just got a minute or so, but let me check and see what you're looking for.
Okay, we're putting on an astro camp. We're going to be simulating growing things on Mars under artificial light. I have the option of using a full ultraviolet black light or the Grolux bulbs. Both of them come in a fluorescent tube format. Which is better, with pure ultraviolet light or the Grolux, which is a modified kind of light?
Oh, I'm so glad you checked. So glad you checked, Chris, because you would have made a major mistake with the ultraviolet light. Plants use the entire visible spectrum for photosynthesis. That is, the light that we can see is the light that they use for photosynthesis. So you want to use that grow light that's been specially designed and balanced to produce the visible wavelengths of light the plants use, particularly in photosynthesis. And that's the blue end and the red end of the spectrum. Do not use the ultraviolet. Go with the grow light. Chris, that'll help you out there. Thank you so much for the call. And folks, thanks to everybody that called in today. Don't forget the LaTerra Master Gardener plant sale next Saturday from 1 to 8 at the LSU Ag Center Raceland office. And I'll see y'all again next Saturday right here on The Garden Show. Good gardening, y'all. Bye-bye.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.